an incident that happened to me the other day. But I guess to properly introduce it, which is very willing, or Wiederblink, and all of you, I want to read to you, I want to share with you a comment from the Baal Shem Tov, which is printed in the Baal Shem Tov Torah in the writings on Megillas Esther. Listen to what he says. I'll give a little context to the story that I want to share with you. He's commenting on the Pasuk, Uvigia Tur Nara V'Nara Levo El Melech. And the time came for each of the young women to go before the Melech HaChashverosh. So it's brought here. Sefer wasn't written by the Baal Shem Tov, but it's collected from different Svarim. And the Baal Shem Tov apparently expressed the following idea. Hinei yadua ki kol ma sha'adam roa o shumeya inu b'mikra. Anything that a person hears or sees, anything that a person encounters in this world, it's not happenstance, it's not by chance. There's a reason that we see things, there's a reason that we hear things. Sometimes we overhear a conversation. Sometimes we see something as we're walking down the street and we wonder why it is that I had to see that. I'm not talking about a davar isra, I'm just saying, you know, you see something taking place, a strange sight, and you wonder why did Hashem want me to see that? Why did Hashem want me to hear this? Obviously, with our widow blink in the room, this is obviously a certain approach to Hashgacha Pratis, which I personally am fond of, and that was certainly the approach of the Baal Shem Tov and Chassidus. There are other approaches as well, that not every thing that you see or hear is necessarily a precise message to you. But the Baal Shem Tov certainly felt that way, that everything a person sees is a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a reason I saw that, there's a reason I heard that, there's a reason I experienced it. And he explains, and this is a little bit Kabbalistic, but just to flesh out the idea, there's a notion that the world is filled with holy sparks, and holy letters. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu built the world, it's Gemara in Brachos, that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the osios of the Aleph Beis in order to create the world. Gemara says in the ninth parak of Brachos, when Bezalel was making the Mishkan, he knew the secret of the letters, and he was able to form all sorts of interesting things that al derech hateva, or wondrous things about the Mishkan and the Mikdash, which didn't operate necessarily by the normal laws of science or physics. So he says that the world is filled with letters, the world is filled with holy sparks, v'choshkim u'misavim tamid l'shorsham. And that idea, or that spark, or that thing that needs tikkun wants to return to its source. And sometimes, again, exactly how the scattering of these sparks occurred goes back all the way to Adam and Chava, according to Chassidus and Kabbalah. But there's these sparks in the world that want to be connected to a Jew. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will sometimes have you encounter something which is a little bit unusual, a sight, a sound, and it's trying to attach itself to you. And if you listen to it in the right way, and if you learn something from it, if you see something and you learn from it, then all of a sudden that brings a tikkun of sorts. That elevates whatever it is that needed to be rectified. So with this introduction, I want to share with you a personal experience that happened to me in the supermarket the other week. Just to give you a little more context for this, the Baal Shem Tov himself, one time, it's brought in the Sefer Amunah Sitecha, from Moshe Wolfson Shlita, in Parshas Naso, he says that one time the Baal Shem Tov saw someone being Mechal Shabbos. And the Baal Shem Tov said, if I see someone violating Shabbos, it must mean that I myself am somewhat guilty of that. Or why would Hashem want me to see such a thing? It must be Hashem saying, you need to be more sensitive about Shabbos. So he started thinking, the Baal Shem Tov himself started thinking, when was I Mechal Shabbos? Is there an area of halacha that I'm not particular about? Was it Mechal Shabbos? Shogeg? Accident? What could it be? And then all of a sudden he realized, this is again how a person has to analyze these types of encounters. He said, I know what it was. He said, the other week I saw a young Talmud Chacham standing in the marketplace, and there was a fellow who was speaking disrespectfully to this young Rav. And the truth is, I really should have stood up for this rabbi. I should have come to his defense. It's not a proper way to speak to anyone, let alone a person of Torah stature. And I didn't stand up for this Talmud Chacham. So Baal Shem Tov said, in the Zohar refers to Talmidei Chachamim, to great Jews, elevated Jews, as Shabbos. They're spiritually on the level of Shabbos. So he says, when I didn't stand up for that Talmud Chacham, I was Mechalel Shabbos. I didn't come to the defense of that Jew. So Baal Shem Tov said, I have to do something to fix this. And that Motzei Shabbos, he hit the road, he traveled to the Pnei Yoshua, the Holy Pnei Yoshua, and he lit his pipe for him. He wanted to mishamish him. He lit his pipe for him to show respect to a Talmud Chacham as a means of tikkun for not having respect to that other Talmud Chacham. So the Baal Shem Tov practiced what he preached. He was always looking for messages and always trying to listen and to see things and try to understand what, you know, I can learn from everything. Right? person who's wise learns from everyone. So here's what happened to me the other week. I'm standing in, I live in Bergenfield, New Jersey. Sorry, Willie mentioned. And I was in Acme. I was in the supermarket. And there's this fellow behind me. And I'm looking at this guy. And he's wearing these like very tight pants. Now I know that's in style for some people these days. I know that's like a thing. But it wasn't like, you know, just tight, trendy pants. It was more like professional tight pants. Like if you saw a football player in tight pants, you'd say, oh, he's a football player. So this guy, he had like some type of uniform on, but I couldn't place it exactly. So I try to be a friendly person. So I started, you know, as I'm waiting online there, I started saying hello to this guy. He just looked like he had an interesting story. So I introduced myself, and he said, hi, my name's Earl. I said, hi, my name's Moshe. So I don't know if I like, somehow I indicated like, what's your story? You must have something interesting. So he says to me, I'm a professional tightrope walker. A professional tightrope walker. Tightrope. Not Jewish. Not that I know of. So I said, wow, that's so fascinating. I never met a professional tightrope walker. I said, how long have you been practicing? Like, how does one become a professional tightrope walker? So he tells me, he says, well, the truth is my grandfather was also a tightrope walker. He says, my father, he didn't use these Lashonos, because my father veered from the Mesorah a little bit, you know, broke the tradition. He said, but when I was 8 years old, I also wanted to walk in the footsteps of my grandfather, and I wanted to be a tightrope walker. So I said, okay. So I said, like, where does one learn how to do that? He says, what do you mean? When I was 8 years old, he says, I went to a tightrope walking camp. So I said, how many kids are in the camp? Like, four kids? You know, like, I can't imagine it's such a... He said, no, it's like a whole world of people who, you know, who train in these types of things. So I said, I have a question for you. I don't know why I asked him this. I said, what's the hardest part of being a tightrope walker? So he gets very animated. You can see this guy's like very into, he's like, let me tell you. He said, when you start off, of course, you don't start off on the high rope, 50 feet off the ground. Right? He says, you start off on a very, you know, just like a rope that's low to the ground. And he says, it's very hard. People don't realize how thin the rope is, how taut the rope is. He says, the first thing you have to do is just have to stand on the rope. You have to practice standing on the rope. So you get on the rope, and you stand for 5 seconds, and you fall off. You get back on another 10 seconds, and you fall off. 15 seconds, you fall off. Eventually, he says, it hurts a lot in the back of your, you know, the back of your legs. You start to build up the muscles. You start to build up the concentration. He says, and you just have to practice standing until you can stand for a period of time, for a significant period of time. So I said, well, you have that pole, right, to help you, to balance. So he says, no. He says, at the beginning, they don't let you use the pole. It's like skiing, you know, they don't let you use the poles at the beginning because they want you to actually learn how to stop on your skis. So he said, no, they don't let you use the pole. You have to just practice standing. He said, after that, then they teach you how to take steps. And it's not like regular walking. Obviously, it's not side by side. It's a single rope. But he was showing me, he was doing this whole demonstration in Acme for me, you know, the special technique and heel to toe. And he's all giving me like all these, you know, Lashonos new concepts for me. I said, wow, that's fascinating. He said, we have classes. This is really amazing. We have classes that are dedicated to working on concentration and focus. Should I have that for tefillah? He said, because one of the hardest parts, he says, especially when you get, you know, many feet off the ground, is being able to get into a zone, being totally focused, and not losing your concentration as you make the various maneuvers up on the rope. So he said, we have classes that teach us techniques and skills, and we practice different techniques in order to develop tremendous focus and concentration. So give me this whole, you know, give me the whole lesson of how one climbs the ranks, so to speak, in tightrope walking. But I said, earlier you didn't answer my question. I said, what's the hardest part about being a tightrope walker? So he says to me, here's the hardest part. He says, this is the part that separates, so to speak, those who become professional and those who never cross over into the big leagues. He says, the hardest part is learning how to change directions on the rope. So he says, hardest part is learning how to change directions on the rope. I said, what's so hard? You get to the end of the rope, you get up on the platform, and you turn around. So he said, very funny. He said, no, when you're midway, when you're standing on the rope, facing in one direction, he says, once you learn how to balance, once you learn how to focus, once you learn the walking technique, it's actually not so hard. That part with training, almost anyone can do. He says, but to learn that when you're facing in one direction of the rope, and he gives me this little demonstration, to be able to flip yourself around and to land on a tiny little wire in the opposite direction, he says, that's very, very difficult. And he says, a lot of people can't do that. He says, they can't land it. And all the more so when they get many feet off the ground, they can't overcome the fear of what happens if I jump and I don't land on the rope. So I'm thinking to myself, what a beautiful lesson to learn from Earl and Acme in the month of El. No? I'm thinking, a person sets out on a derech. One of the psukim that we know from the Haftorah of Tana Sibur, excuse me, and also from the Amna Ram Davening, Ya'azov Rasha Darko, V'ish Oven Machshavosav, Ya'azov Rasha Darko, that the Rasha has to abandon his derech. So let's ask you a question, which I think is actually a very good question, from Rav Henoch of Alexander. The Rebbe Rav Henoch of Alexander asked the following question. He said, I don't understand the pasuk. Ya'azov Rasha Darko. The Rasha should abandon his derech. Does a Rasha have a derech? Think about it. What does it mean to have a derech? Rav Chaim Kanievsky has a derech. He has a way he does things. He has a time when he eats. He has a seder of how he learns. Right? Everything is calculated. There was an article in Mishpacha magazine a number of years ago about Rav Chaim Kanievsky's Shabbos table. It was mamish. Everything to the second was timed. It was planned. They do this and they do that. Everything. His whole life is precisely ordered. Well, Yashav Zatzal had a derech. He said, and the Sadiqim could sit in the same spot and have the same Seder day in, day out for their whole life. Right? A Rasha doesn't have a derech. What does it mean, Ya'azov Rasha Darko? The Rasha should abandon his derech. He doesn't have a derech. One day he wakes up at 9, one day he wakes up at 10. He goes to this place, he goes to that place. He wakes up and he does whatever he's feeling that day. Chases after this desire or that desire. What does it mean for the Rasha to abandon his way? So the Rebbe of Henoch of Alexander said a very profound thing. Rav Henoch of Alexander said that the Rasha's derech is not so much in his actions, but it's in his mindset. The Rasha's derech is that he's convinced that he's a Rasha and it would be impossible to change directions. Like Earl the tightrope walker said, changing directions when you've worked so hard to forge a path and you've gotten used to walking in a particular way, to then be able to turn the whole thing around is a very difficult thing to do. I'll give you a mashal. Imagine a kid, a young man, he's been driving for a short period of time. He's getting better at it. He's been on the highway a bunch of times. You know, his parents are letting him drive a little bit more on his own now. He says to his parents one day, he says, I want to visit my friend for Shabbos. Lives 3 hours from here. 3 hours from here? I don't know if you're ready for a 3-hour drive. He says, no, I'm ready, I've been practicing for long enough. I'm ready to do it. His mother, his father, whoever it is, says, okay, we're willing to give you a chance. So he gets in the car. Hashem was so nice to him. It's a beautiful day. He bought some nice, snacks for the car. He's listening to some music or a shir, Wayu Torah. Get a little plug for Wayu Torah. Right? And he's got the windows open. No traffic. He's driving along. He's so excited to spend Shabbos with his best friend. He's driving. He's 15 minutes into the trip. He's 45 minutes into the trip. He's an hour and a half into the trip. The cell phone rings. Very carefully answers the phone. It's one of his parents. And his mother says, how's the trip going? So he says, oh, it's great. It's great. Smooth sailing, no problems. The roads are open. I'm driving very carefully, not to worry. And he says to his parents, he says, I never realized there's such beautiful scenery this time of the year along Route 1 North. So his mother says, you mean Route 1 South? So he says, what do you mean Route 1 South? She says, I told you, you have to take Route 1 south for about 2.5 hours, and then you have to, navigate the last half hour of the local streets. So he says, I've been going an hour and a half on Route 1 north. So now, what happens in that moment? You have to make a choice. You could either say, well, he's not really my best friend, and I have another friend who lives in this direction, or I'm sure there's nice attractions over here. I heard there's a Chabad house where I could crash for Shabbos. I'll figure something out. He's already coming up with all sorts of explanations why, an hour and a half in the wrong direction, that's no big deal. I can find a way to make this work. But if he's honest, and he realizes that his best friend is now 4.5 hours in the other direction, if he's honest, and he's willing to admit his mistakes, then he gets off the highway, and he turns himself around, and he heads back in the direction that he really wanted to be in all along. But it takes courage to do that. It's hard. It's hard to make that change when you're walking in one direction. To be able to flip yourself around to walk in the other direction is a very difficult thing. Whether you're on a tightrope or whether you're just a human being walking planet Earth. And that's the challenge of Ya'azov Rasha Darko. Ya'azov Rasha Darko means we all lock ourselves into a certain path in life. Right? And it doesn't have to be a bad path. It doesn't mean that we've been living a terrible life that we have to uproot everything. But Tavshanayin Zayin, give us a certain derech, and Tav Shanai and Ches, the new year, is giving us a different derech, the possibility to do things differently. For some people, you have it locked into your mind. I can only be this good in learning. And Gemara is hard for me. It's not my thing. I have other things. And so you've decided, you've made it your derech that I can only do X, Y, or Z. For other people, it's in midos. Person has a temper and says, oh, I'm just an angry guy. I'll never be able to conquer that. I'll never be able to change that. It is what it is. But what the Pasuk is saying, Ya'azov Rasha Darko, the Rasha doesn't have a derech in actions. It is a derech in terms of a roadblock, in terms of his thinking. And we all often, again, we rationalize, we come up with ways to explain to ourselves, why, if I've been traveling in the wrong direction, I'll make it work. I'll find a way to make it work. It's not so bad. It's not such a terrible direction in the first place. And that's what I learned from Earl the Tightrope Walker, that it's very hard to change directions. But then he says to me, as I'm about to leave, he says, but let me just tell you one last thing. He says, I want to tell you about the first time that I actually changed directions on the high roof. He says, I've been training for a long time, practicing on the ground. He says, but it's a world of difference, you know, when you're 2 or 3 feet off the ground and you're 50 feet in the air. So I said, there's no net? He said, no, of course there's a net, but if you fall, you can break your leg, you can still get very badly injured. And after all that training, you know, to be able to do those maneuvers up in the sky is not so simple. He says, there's a lot of emotional training that goes into it to overcome the fear, to be able, again, you don't just pivot around. He showed me this move where you jump and turn directions and land on this rope. And it's very challenging, physically challenging, mentally challenging. So he says, I want to tell you about the first time I did it. He said, my coach was down below. He was walking me through the various techniques again, you know, spelling it out, playing it out, giving me the reminders, things I need to focus on. He says, I'm standing there on the rope, and I'm trying to overcome this fear that, like, I can't do this. I'm going to fall, right? What happens if I fall? I'm going to be terribly embarrassed. This could end my career. I'll never make it as a professional tightrope walker. I'll be a disgrace to my family, to my grandfather, you know, who was in the circus. Yeah? All of a sudden, he said, I got the courage, and I did the move, and I landed it. And he says to me, he looks at me, he says, you can't imagine how good that feeling was. You can't imagine after all of that training to be able to make that change of direction, of physical direction. He said it was the greatest feeling in the world. So I said, okay, thank you so much. You know, so nice to meet you. So nice to hear your story. He's clearly very passionate about what he does. Right? But I was thinking about this Torah from the Baal Shem Tov, that everything that we see or everything that we hear, Kadosh Baruch Hu is talking to us. Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, yes, of course it's scary to change directions. To decide I can learn Night Seder if I haven't learned Night Seder until this point. To decide I can learn more Night Seder if I've already locked myself in, I can only learn this much. There's so many things in Avodas Hashem, so many areas of life, where we get on a derech, we stick with that derech, and it's hard to make that change. But we have to believe that Chodesh Elul, and as we enter into Rosh Hashanah, Tavshin Ayin Ches, that it's possible for a person to make a change. And when you do it, it's the greatest feeling in the world. That's what Earl said. After all that anxiety, when I was finally able to make the move, it was the greatest feeling in the world. So I want to just tell you one other little story, again, to help us to learn this technique of being able to listen to people. Shlomo Freifeld one time had to go to the bank to manage the yeshiva's account. Shlomo Freifeld, for those who don't know, is the founder of Shor Yashiv. An amazing, amazing educator, amazing tzaddik, amazing Talmud Chacham, amazing person. If you haven't seen the biography, it's an amazing, amazing book to read. It's called Rav Shlomo. It has a purple cover of the story of Rav Shlomo Freifeld. Really unbelievable insights into just relating to yourself, relating to others, relating to Hashem. Really amazing, amazing book. So Rav Freifeld, one time, he went to the bank, along with one of his Talmidim, and he had to manage the bank's account. So he comes to the front desk, and he meets this woman who he had spoken to many times on the phone before, but he never met her in person. So he walks in. Now, for those who've never seen Rav Freifeld was like a towering figure. You know, he carried himself in like a very regal kind of way, very powerful looking person. So Rav Freifeld walks into the bank, escorted by his student, and he walks over to the front desk, and there's this little lady teller at the desk, and he says, hi, I'm Shlomo Freifeld. He introduces himself. So she says, oh, Rabbi Freifeld, so nice to meet you. Spoken on the phone so many times, I never met you in person. And then she blurts out, a strange thing to say, she says, Rabbi, I never imagined you'd be such a big person. Okay. And Rosh Yeshivas usually come in two types, right? There's like the very tall, towering Rosh Yeshiva, and then there's like the short, cute Rosh Yeshiva I'm talking about. The two different styles of Rosh Yeshivas. Yeah, so Rav Freifeld is more of like that very like charismatic, powerful-looking, you know, tall Rosh Yeshiva. So she says to him, I never thought you'd be such a big person. So, okay, nice to meet you too. She says to him, the manager of the bank wants to speak to you. Mm-hmm. He's up on the second floor. You should probably go up and something about the yeshiva's account. There's a note here that you should come and see him. So Rabbi Feifeld and his student, they can make their way upstairs. They go to the manager of the bank and they sit down, and the manager opens up their files, pulls up the yeshiva's file on the computer, and he says, Rabbi Feifeld, I have some bad news. Its payroll's coming up and looks like the account is a little bit short. Looks like your account this month is a little bit short. So Rabbi Feifeld turns to the student and he says, did you hear what just happened? So the student says, yeah, maybe we have to do a little fundraising, you know, we got to make sure we can pay the bills. So Rabbi Feifeld says, no, did you hear what just happened? He says, downstairs, they tell me I'm a big man. He says, but when I get upstairs, they tell me that my account's a little bit short. Imagine? Mm-hmm. Rabbi Feifeld could hear something like that. The bacher heard that the yeshiva needs money. Rabbi Feifeld heard, you know, we go through life and we pat ourselves on the back and sometimes we feel like we're big enough. And sometimes we are. We're big people. Right? But when we get upstairs, the Kaddish Baruch Hu says, yeah, but you could have made one more change. You could have done something, a small change you could have done. So I want to just leave you with a beautiful insight into a Rashi, the first Rashi in Chumash Bamidbar. The first Rashi in Chumash Bamidbar, similar to the first Rashi at the beginning of Sefer Shemos, describes the Kaddish Baruch Hu's love for Klal Yisrael. Someone once told me that each of the five books of the Torah, Rashi, Dafka, wanted to start off with a message of Hashem's intense love and respect and care for Klal Yisrael. So the Rashi, at the very beginning of Bamidbar, as it describes, of course, English, the book of Numbers, right, were counted several times in Chumash Bamidbar, again in Parshas Pinchas. Rashi says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us so much that He's counting us all the time. Mitochi basan lefanov mona osam kol shah. Like a person who's obsessed with something, a person who's obsessed with money is always counting their money. A person who has a certain object that they care a lot about, so they're always checking in on it, making sure your phone's in your pocket, yeah, holding it, something that's precious to you, something that's valuable to you, it's expensive, you want to keep an eye on it. So Kadosh Baruch Hu loves Klai, so he's always counting us. He's counting us when we left Mitzrayim, says Rashi, he counted us after the Egel. Hashem is always counting to see how is my Klai Yisrael doing. But I want to share with you a very interesting insight. A diuk in this Rashi, maybe a different way to learn the Rashi. Bevnechi basan lefan of mona osam kol shah. Of course, the Pashup Shad is that it means that Kadosh Baruch Hu counts us kol shah all the time. Kol Shah all the time, every hour, not literally every hour. Kadosh Baruch Hu is always watching over Klal Yisrael. Where's the first time that word Shah appears in Tanakh? We have a Kabbalah that the first time that a word appears in the Torah, that's the essence of what that word means. Where's the first time we have the word Shah? Anyone remember? In Bereshis Perek Dalet, when Kayin offers his carbon, it says, Ve'al Kayin ve'al minchaso lo Shah. That to Kayin and his offering, lo sha'ah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't turn. Sha'ah means to turn, to pay attention to. Right? So I heard once an explanation of this Rashi. Mitochi basan, Hashem loves the Jewish people. And Hashem is so proud of the things that we do in our life, that He's mona kol sha'ah. Hashem counts our every turn, our every move. Kol sha'ah, the way it's used in Bereishis, Perek Dalet Pasukei, Vel Kayin vel menchaso lo sha'ah. Hashem didn't turn Himself towards Kayin. Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at us this time of the year and says, listen, you may not be able to jump off a high rope and land on 2 feet in the complete opposite direction. And you know what? Maybe in our lives we don't need to forge a totally different direction. Maybe that's not what we need to do in our lives. We don't need a different direction completely. But Hashem says, give me a shah. Ein lecha adam she'ein lo shah, as it says in Pirkei Avos. Every person can make a shah. Every person can turn a little bit, can change directions a little bit. Yazov Rasha Darko, Chas V'Shalom, no one here is a Rasha. The very opposite. V'amech Kulam Tzadikim. But Hashem says, I love when I see that Jews are willing to be honest with themselves and to be self-reflective, to take advantage of the opportunities that one has around oneself to grow, which you certainly have here in Yeshiva, and to be able to say, I'm going to do a Shah, I'm going to make a little turn. Ein lecha adam she'ein lo Shah. There's no person who can't make a little turn. So Mirtz Hashem, as we come to Rosh Hashanah, it's right around the corner. We should keep these ideas in mind. We should keep the challenge of making a change in one's life, as we learned from Earl, right? And also the simcha, the excitement that comes when a person makes that change. And again, to be able to train ourselves, to see the world like the Baal Shem Tov and like Rav Feifeld, to be listening, to be watching, to try to pick up on those lessons that are around us all the time. Well, the more so when we surround ourselves with good chaverim and good rabbeim, there's a lot to learn. And hopefully we'll pay close attention, we'll listen carefully, and then Mirtz Hashem will be able to make those changes that will move us in the right direction towards the Kaddish Baruch. Thank you all very much. It's supposed to join you. I think we're going to head down to Mincha now. Okay.